And welcome to our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today we have Dr. John Matzinger. He is the Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of Virtua Health in New Jersey. And welcome, Dr. John.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great today. It is a lovely day, and I'm looking forward to a conversation about Virtua. And that's because it's such a major part of the healthcare for this region, and we're going to learn a lot more about it today. So would you like to start off our discussion with a little bragging? Tell us about the Virtua Health.
So thanks for having me today. Virtua Health has honestly been around in the South Jersey community since the 1880s. It's grown, had different names, but currently we have 5 hospitals, 7 emergency departments, over 280 locations located throughout all of South Jersey. We have over 900 clinicians in our medical group, and we've really been at the forefront of care in our community, and really seen a lot of miraculous things occur over the last year and a half.
You've got 14,000. Staff members, 14,000 people working there.
14,000 strong colleagues across the health system, and you know what? They've come to work every day, trying to do good and be here for good in the community.
Well, you alluded to it first. Now that we're finally seeing light at the end of the tunnel, how has this last year been for Virtua?
Well, I think for Virtua and everyone else, it's been challenging. None of us have ever faced a global pandemic before. We learned a lot over the last year and a half. If you really think back to where we were in January or February of 2020, not knowing what was coming, seeing what was coming out of China and out of Washington State, we didn't know what we were facing. But there was a tremendous amount of work that was done and a lot of care given to our community. And we've kind of seen all aspects of COVID over that time. We went from not knowing much about it to knowing a lot about COVID and how to treat people. I think in the middle, it was an overwhelming feeling. But I think now you're kind of getting a sense of a little bit of relief. It's not over by any means, but we're able to take a breath. We're able to kind of get back to the work we used to do. So, that's exciting in and of itself.
I hadn't thought about it, but as obviously a career hospital professional, this has to be a defining moment of your career. And for so many physicians, you're going to hope that you never see anything like this again, but to have experienced it.
Yeah, I would have loved to never go through my career experiencing it, but it definitely was a learning opportunity. We learned a lot about what works in our healthcare systems and what doesn't work, and it helps us prepare for the future. And make sure that if, God forbid, something like this ever occurs again, we're prepared in a different way. But I think from our aspects, we also saw what people can do together. When people band together, when health systems across the region, I talked with my colleagues at other health systems pretty much on a daily basis. We were functioning as a healthcare unit that if anybody needed something, we would make sure it got there.
Were you experiencing the shortages, and did you get to that point where you thought we're not gonna make it through tomorrow or next week? How?
In the very first days, yeah, we were absolutely there like everyone else. In March of 2020, remember the supply chain is global. You get your masks, your gloves, your gowns from across the world. A lot comes out of China, actually. Well, China was shut down, so there was nothing coming. So we spent a lot of time in those first couple of weeks trying to find different gowns, gloves, anything we could to keep our colleagues safe. And, there were some dicey days where you were looking and you're like, I got 5 days on supply on hand. But, our supply chain team and the team behind the scenes that gets our equipment worked literally around the clock for months. And we never, thank God, knock on wood, we never ran out. But, there were some days where you were looking at the piles and you're like, it looks a little thin.
I can't imagine. And especially since you'd be reading the newspapers, you'd be hearing reports out of Italy and how other countries were faring with this and not knowing how big it would get. I can't even fathom how you slept in those first months.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of sleep in the first couple months. And, we saw firsthand what was coming out of Italy. There were a lot of podcasts and a lot of interviews with Italian physicians and other healthcare members of what they were facing. And then, we saw what occurred, obviously, in New York and northern New Jersey. So we did have the ability to prepare. I do think in the initial days when we saw really everything shut down and people went into their homes and weren't going out, that probably saved us from the initial wave that we saw, that huge wave that they saw in Italy and New York City. We saw a lot of people, but we fortunately never saw what they saw because we were able to get a little bit ahead of it.
Now, how are you doing right now? How many hospitalizations?
Right now, things are good comparatively. I mean, COVID's not over, and I don't want to give any false pretenses that it is, but we're probably at our lowest numbers in the hospital system since August of last year, just above single digits across our five hospitals. There's no hospital in our system that has more than five patients, thank God, right now. We are definitely seeing a return to normalcy, which is a great thing in the health system. We're seeing visitors come back in. Obviously, we're putting some restrictions around that, making sure people are wearing masks in the healthcare setting. But that brings a lot of good energy. They can support their family members and their time in need when they're coming in for their normal, and I never thought I'd say this, routine care, routine surgeries. Not that there's a routine surgery, but kind of more of a sense of normalcy. We're getting back to more of our typical patient mix of people coming in with routine follow-up surgeries, getting treated for other medical illnesses, which we didn't see a lot of that in the beginning of the pandemic. People were what we were calling medically distancing. So they were at home suffering with their medical conditions and afraid to go to the hospital. Fortunately, with people getting vaccinated, people are a little more returned to normalcy.
Are you attributing this to those vaccines?
Yeah, I definitely think that was a stake in the ground when the vaccines started. We've been very fortunate at Virtual to be part of the mass vaccination effort. We, with the Burlington County and the state, ran the mega site for Burlington County. We've done over 425,000 vaccines as an organization. And I really do think that was a turning point for us as well as the rest of the region and the country, where we're seeing how effective these vaccines really are. You can see it around the world where low vaccination rates, you're seeing a fourth and fifth surge now. We're unfortunately even seeing it in our own country where states that have low vaccination rates are now starting to see a surge. I mean, some states have seen a 30% increase in the last 2 weeks with COVID cases, and their vaccination rates are below 50%. So I definitely have no doubt that vaccines that we have been giving have been effective on COVID to this point. And that's why our numbers aren't going up. And we're actually getting to the point where people are back outside or back out living their life, whether that be outside or inside dining. Sporting events have opened up, and we just really haven't seen another surge because of vaccination rates.
Oh, that was what I was going to ask you, is we've had a few weeks now of this gradual return, and then all of a sudden, hey, floodgates are open. So do you think that we are past COVID, or is this something we're going to deal with forever in just various forms?
Yeah, I don't think we're past COVID by any means. I mean, we have to pay attention to what's going on. We have to practice common sense with washing hands, and with our vaccination rate at 70%, we still have to realize 30% of people are not vaccinated. That means there are still a lot of people that are vulnerable in our communities. And I think we have our future in our own hands. If we continue to get vaccinated, continue to push the rates up into the 80s and 90s would be phenomenal, then I do think that we can kind of put this behind us. But what we're seeing now in our health system is that there's different people, whether it be age, race, gender, ethnicity, that are in the hospital with COVID. The one thing they have in common is they're not vaccinated. So it really puts a spotlight on the importance of the vaccination. And if we do want to get this behind us and we want this pandemic to be in the rearview mirror and not flare up and keep coming back, then everybody has to do their part and get vaccinated.
And it's easy now.
It is. I mean, you know, in those first couple of days in the end of December of 2020 and January, it was like the golden ticket. You know, they were hard to come by. Now the vaccines are not hard to come by. You can walk into pharmacies, supermarkets, physician offices in certain instances. You know, the mega site is, we're still going to be running the mega site until towards the end of July, middle to end of July. And the reason we're going to decommission the mega site is because we're not in a mass vaccination scenario where we need to do 6,000 a day, because there are a lot of outlets for people to go get their vaccines.
I interviewed the Delaware Department of Health and Human Services, Social Services, and I asked about, if you're offered a vaccine and you have a choice, you know, which one do you want to get? And she said, the one that is offered to you. Take it, grab it right away.
Absolutely.
But yeah. So if you're offered a vaccine, get the darn thing. But why are we seeing this hesitancy to get it when there's no one who hasn't grown up at this point who didn't get vaccinated when they were kids for all these other ailments?
Yeah, I think unfortunately this vaccine was politicized, and you know, there was some confusion and concern about what was believed to be the speed of the vaccine coming out. The technology is not new. I mean, the technology has been worked on for a while, you know, in different research organizations throughout our country for quite a while. So mRNA technology is not new. What we're really seeing is that the vaccination is really good. It's holding up as more and more literature comes out about how long the immunity lasts. So it's holding up quite well. You know, like any other vaccine, there's mild side effects. You know, typically what we've seen, like everyone else, is, you know, the fever, the headache, the chills, the body aches, which are very temporary, you know, last less than a day in most cases. There has been obviously a lot of literature about some heart inflammation, but the literature in children, but the literature that's come out and, you know, the FDA and everyone else has looked at this and the CDC, it's very mild. It's self-limited. It's easily treated. So, I mean, unfortunately, we have, as a health, just our health system has taken care of thousands of COVID patients. We've had hundreds of people, unfortunately, pass away from this disease. And looking at the vaccine in comparison to COVID, there is no comparison. Take the vaccine.
Yeah, people are still getting COVID. And yeah, a few symptoms for a couple of days, temporary, even if for a couple of days, versus a disease that has just some grave consequences and can last longer than we're seeing the long term, the long haulers,
yeah.
Right? Help out the host there.
Yeah, you bring up a phenomenal point. The long haulers are something that we have been seeing in our offices, and what that really means is we're seeing people who contracted COVID in the spring of 2020, so maybe April of 2020, and that's more than a year ago, and they're still coping with long-term consequences of that, like things like fatigue, shortness of breath, what they describe as a brain fog. Even, you know, we've unfortunately seen people suffer from strokes from COVID and needing long-term care from that. Really, to address this, because we were seeing this in our offices and we realized we needed a coordinated approach, we created what's called a care after COVID program where we can either refer people in or they can directly refer themselves in and go through a full evaluation that is multi-specialty. So we have pulmonology, we have physical therapy, cardiology, neurology. Basically, all these healthcare professionals are evaluating the patient together in a team-based approach to figure out what's the best way to help this person recover from their long-term effects of COVID. And we've seen really good success. I think that it's definitely shows that the team-based approach works, and it probably works for multiple types of disorders, but especially for COVID, where you get input from all those specialists at the same time, say, this is the road we're going to go to make this person feel better.
Oh, we're past the halfway mark. If you're just joining us, this is Our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, Dr. John Massinger. He is the Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of Virtua Health of New Jersey. And if you'd like more information about the Virtua Healthcare Just go to virtua.org. That's real easy, virtua.org. So you've got this care after COVID treatment initiative. You've got this set up. Have you done anything else? Has the pandemic changed the way you're providing your care? Has it changed operations in any fashion? Have you realized, hey, this is more efficient, or, gee, we need to go back to what we were doing before?
Yeah, I think that the pandemic was definitely a pressure test, a stress test for every healthcare organization. You know, there were things that we were looking at for years that we, you know, we probably kicked the tires on, but never really got too deep into. It was just not the right time, or, you know, other things became a priority. I would say one is telehealth. You know, we as an organization, I know many other organizations have kind of dabbled in telehealth over the years, but I think the pandemic definitely put a light on what the potential of telehealth could be. And, you know, maybe even the consumer or the patient wasn't overly interested in it prior to COVID. But I think that that was just a circumstance that kind of took on a life of its own. People became very comfortable with platforms, whether it be Zoom or Skype or whatever platform, du jour, FaceTime even. And the idea of seeking medical care in there became a much more comfortable scenario. Right now, we are doing telehealth across the organization as well as in-person care. We see that there's a lot of potential for telehealth and urgent care, but even some chronic medical diseases where people come in 3, 4, 5 times a year for checkups, maybe they only need to come in 2 or 3 times in person, and the rest can be done virtually with quick check-ins with their provider. So I do think telehealth is here to stay. I think it's gotten roots, and people use that as a primary method of care during COVID, and now they're willing to continue with that care for a couple of reasons. They're getting good care, but it's also convenient. You know, if you're at home with the flu, you might not necessarily want to go into an office. You know, we can see you virtually. So I think we're going to continue to see that. I think the other things that we saw during the pandemic are things that we were already working on at Virtua. One of the biggest things we saw was continued and increasing food insecurity. And we have a pretty big food access program. We have food pharmacies in a couple of our locations. We have a mobile farmers market that we've had for many years. And right in the middle of this, we were launching our mobile grocery store, the Eat Well mobile grocery store. And this was essentially a supermarket on wheels that was bringing out fresh and healthy foods to neighborhoods that were really food deserts and experiencing food insecurity. So we kept going with that full speed, and that we brought that out in early winter. We brought that out, and it's on the road, and we continue to address food insecurity, and that need is greater than it's ever been. I think COVID just accentuated it.
I'm going to guess that you have to be working with a lot of community organizations and groups providing the basic resources to, again, disadvantaged neighborhoods or disenfranchised people, people with jump in again. That was one of those vague things, yeah. I warned you about.
No, that's fine. It, you know, it really does take a village to do work on social determinants of health. This is not anything that a health system can do by itself or community groups can do by themselves. It really takes everyone kind of rowing in the same direction. And I think that use our mobile grocery store as an example. We work closely with the community assets in order to figure out where this mobile grocery store should go. We have set up it runs a route that it goes through every week so that we get to the same place. It's consistent. People know we're going to be there. And we have nutrition specialists on that who can help with education. So we work with churches, we work with community groups to make sure that we're getting to the right places because they know their community. They live there every day. They have the connections and they're trusted. And we want to lean on that and be a trusted partner.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, so we've already discussed how large and how big Virtua Health is, and so you cover everything, right? You cover us from birth throughout all of our life with our medical care. So what's going on right now? I mentioned birth.
Yeah, you know, birth's a great one. We obviously do have a very large women's program. We deliver probably just shy of about 9,000 babies a year. But one of the things that we're bringing out later this summer is a freestanding birth and midwifery center in our adjacent to our Voorhees campus. And we really were looking at what our women in our community were asking for. And what we noticed is that some people wanted a different type of birthing experience, a more natural birthing experience in like a home-like setting. And what we saw is people were actually leaving southern New Jersey to go into Delaware, into the Pennsylvania suburb, Philadelphia suburbs. And when we really started to explore that to see why, is people were leaving for that reason. So we worked closely with our providers to create a birthing center that takes a more natural approach to the birthing experience. It's not for everybody. It's for people that are specifically looking for that. It's very soothing, welcoming. Midwives are there developing the birth plan and really working directly with the mom on their preferences. But we think it's a nice addition to our portfolio, and we think that we can continue to service our community for those that are looking for that.
I just alluded to that you do care for us throughout our life, and a lot of us in this last year or so did not get the kind of we did not seek medical care, and we avoided hospitals, we avoided our doctors, and now that you're reopening, what are you seeing? I've had other physicians or the American Cancer Society, for example, said that this past year was just devastating to treatment and to their research and to treatment, because this year was a toll. We just kind of like stopped, but our diseases did not.
You're 100% right. We, like everyone else, saw medical distancing, people not wanting to seek care out of fear that they could be exposed to COVID. What we saw is a lot of people put off, especially screening procedures, colonoscopies, mammograms. I mean, we have worked very closely with our primary care doctors as well as our specialists to get people back in for the screening. Screening is crucial. It is much, much easier to catch a cancer when it is at one spot where it can just be removed quickly than to remove a cancer treat a cancer that has spread throughout the body. So we've spent a lot of time trying to make sure that people get the screening test. And I do think that one of the things that was driving some of that was the testing requirements. People, in order to get to go for procedures, whether that be colonoscopies or other, had to go through a lot of screening for COVID. That has recently, with the rates going so low and the vaccinations going up, that has diminished. So if you're vaccinated, you don't need to be tested anymore. So we're hopeful that people keep getting the appropriate screening that they need to. Same with, cardiac. Make sure people get their stress tests, go for their annual exams. It's just so crucial that we do the routine follow-up to prevent the long-term problems.
You have a cancer treatment program, though.
Yes. Yeah, we have multiple locations that people can provide care. We have a partnership with Penn Medicine for all of our cancer programs throughout the region. We have our cancer center in Moorestown, which, is a great location. It's truly making a difference in people's lives. I think the thing that we're most excited about is in 2022, we will be having the first proton therapy center in southern New Jersey, and that's in conjunction with Penn Medicine also. That will be directly located on our Voorhees campus. That will bring bring cutting-edge technology, but also will allow people to get care close to home. And we continue to look for groundbreaking cancer treatments that we can bring to our patients.
You actually just cover us head to toe. Why don't you just say that?
Yeah, I mean that's really our job as the leading provider in southern New Jersey. We truly believe we're here to take care of you whenever you need anything, and we're here to be that trusted partner and be here for good.
you know, we are running out of time. What's things are returning to normal now. Staff, want to give the shout out, the props, and the appreciation to your staff, the physicians, the nurses, the residents, all the people who make Virtua run?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, we are coming back to normal, which is a great thing. And, you know, first off, I think all healthcare providers, you know, we do this. It's our duty. We went into this profession in order to serve. And typically we're in the background doing a lot of things. Over the last year, you know, we can't thank everybody enough for the recognition and, you know, every night people were cheering for people. You know, there were processions, and we greatly appreciate that. I think that, you know, if people still want to, you know, recognize our healthcare professionals and all the frontline workers, I think a thank you is great. Just, you know, thank people for everything they've done. They have spent more time in the last year than anyone can possibly imagine, whether it be on the front line treating COVID patients or vaccinating. You know, we used the same people to do everything. It wasn't like we brought in a whole new force of people. People were just working more and more around the clock to try to get the community back to where they need to be. I think that, you know, we're excited about the future, but we're also, you know, we have our eye towards the future, realizing that COVID's not over. So we have to still be careful. We have to use common sense, and we have to get people vaccinated. If I leave you with one thing, it's get vaccinated.
Well, that was what I was going to say. What are your parting words to us?
Yeah, let's get everybody vaccinated, and let's do our part to keep everyone healthy and safe.
And don't be afraid now to reach out and take care of ourselves. I think that's probably the best way we can help and thank our healthcare providers is keeping ourselves healthy.
Absolutely.
And taking,
you know,
charge again.
We love to see you, but we don't necessarily want to see you in the hospital.
So when we go to virtua.org, what do we find?
Well, you know, that's obviously our website. You can find doctors. You can find all the services we provide. You can make appointments for your physicians on there. Obviously, all of our phone numbers are there, and, you know, our main number is 888-VIRTUA3. That's our access center, and they can help you. We have great navigators and get you wherever you need to be.
Virtua.org is the place to go to find out more about Virtua Health in New Jersey. Virtua.org, and that phone number, 888-VIRTUA3. Again, another easy way, but when you go to the website, you'll find out more information about everything that we've talked about. Make the appointment, get those screenings scheduled, do everything. Virtua.org. My guest today, Dr. John Matzinger. He is the Executive Vice President and the Chief Operating Officer of Virtua Health in New Jersey. And thank you for taking the time to talk to me today.
Thanks for having me, Laura. I appreciate it.
Anytime we have a pandemic, and even before, you can come back.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Dr. John Matzinger again, Executive Vice President, Chief Operating Officer of Virtua Health. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Our Delaware Valley.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.